So we'll present a couple of cases, but Mike, I also want to ask you about, I heard about this marker pole or pole E. Can you comment a little bit on that and kind of how that fits into this puzzle?
Yeah, so polymerase epsilon and polymerase delta are kind of proteins, genes involved in kind of DNA replication. And so if you look at microsatellite stable colorectal cancer, you will see some patients that have a very high tumor mutation burden. And so when you look at those patients, very frequently what you see is a polymerase epsilon and polymerase delta kind of mutation. And so clearly we see this across a number of tumor types. This often happens in GBM-based patients where you see kind of a high rate of a polymerase epsilon, and you can see these patients, kind of young patients with this. And it's consistently shown to have a high tumor mutation burden. Now, the key kind of issue to note here is that polymerase epsilon is a very large gene, so you can have many mutations in it that are not functional. So we're really talking about functional polymerase epsilon mutations, which some recent data at ASCO presented by Timothy Yap showed that, you know, the rate of mutations in polymerase epsilon that are functional is actually approximately, you know, about 20% or so. And so the vast majority of mutations are not functional. And so we're really caring about the functional mutations that result in kind of errors in DNA replication that result in high mutation load, right? So that's your classic functional polymerase epsilon should have a high mutation load, and they get very high mutation loads. And so clearly, anecdotally, we've seen immune responses in these patients. Now, these are very rare, even more rare than we just talked about in regards to kind of deficient mismatch repair. You see them more commonly again in earlier stage disease and very rare as you become more metastatic, which is a very similar story to what we see with deficient mismatch repair, suggesting you have some immune surveillance that's preventing them from kind of becoming developing metastatic sites. But I do think it is a population to potentially recognize and would be one that would make a lot of sense for kind of immune therapy. And I think if we kind of put the polymerase epsilon in the context of kind of this recent kind of tumor agnostic indication for pembrolizumab with patients with a tumor mutation burden greater than 10, that's kind of for all tumor types. So a very recent tumor agnostic indication based on TMB, you can see these patients with a functional polymerase epsilon will always have a TMB greater than 10. So I think there is an avenue now to kind of get these patients immune therapy. And so from my view, that is a group that we do look for, though I would say it is, you were talking probably in the metastatic space, the less than 1% kind of space or numbers in regards to finding these patients. But clearly, if you found a functional polymerase E, I think immune therapy would be the recommendation from me in regards to kind of the approach. And with this tumor agnostic indication, you can actually now do that as a standard of care practice.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that indication because I've been asking people on a variety of tumor types, Mike, kind of where it fits in or, you know, what it actually means clinically, what kind of situations. It was 10, which is not that high. Can you describe a clinical situation where you think this would apply, Mike? Would it be like rare tumors or where would you use this?
Yeah, we can have an interesting discussion on this point because the FDA gave this approval. If you look at the FDA label, you don't see any common tumor types. It's a number of rare tumor types that demonstrated a high TMB with improved kind of clinical outcomes. And the challenge that I have here is that unlike deficient mismatch repair, which is really kind of a fundamental, consistent alteration that leads to a really expected kind of outcome, irrespective of tumor histology, TMB is often very tumor histology dependent. You know, the reason for having a tumor mutation burden high is very dependent on the tumor type and what the carcinogenic exposure or kind of the development of that tumor is. And so there's a lot more, I think, inconsistency when you think about applying this across various different tumor histology and tumor types. And so we can kind of come back to colorectal cancer, but there were no colorectal cancer patients in the FDA label for this approval. And if you actually go into the colorectal cancer space and say, well, what is the experience with immune therapy in patients that have, you know, a high TMB? And those studies have been done. And the experience is the response rates are dismal. You know, less than 5% space is what you see. It's not what's kind of seen from the FDA label that got the approval, which is more kind of around 30% kind of response rates. And so what I would say, Neil, is that, you know, the population that I think is the potential driver. What is that rare population? The polymerase epsilon is clearly one of the more common ones. There was a recent kind of TMB evaluation from the TRIBE2 study that was presented at ASCO and ESMO that looked at TMB in that kind of study population and actually found high TMBs in the microsatellite stable population. But I think the vast majority of them were polymerase epsilon driven. And so from my take, my recommendation is I think unless you have a driver polymerase epsilon mutation for microsatellite stable colorectal cancer with a TMB greater than 10, I think the chance of activity is markedly lower than what we see with the FDA label. And so I think that has to be the real kind of understanding of providers and patients in regards to kind of potentially engaging on that label. And I would say, you know, from my view, I think, you know, the rare tumor type where we have less understanding, we don't have the studies to kind of tell us what the real expectation is, I think there's rationale and it makes sense. But I think in a common tumor type where we have the data that gives us the answer, I don't necessarily agree with this kind of tumor agnostic indication would be kind of my general sense.
So Axel, one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, almost every cancer, when you have a patient is in good condition with metastatic disease or runs out of options, people think about checkpoint inhibitors, even if there's no data. And, you know, you can understand clinically why they might want to think about it, although there's also the toxicity. I was thinking that this indication might actually make it easier for, you know, a doc to do that outside of, you know, if they happen to have a high TMB, but I couldn't really figure out what this is all about. Axel, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I couldn't figure it out either, you know, because I completely agree with what Mike said. And I've outed myself as a critiquer of the FDA approval on Twitter, you know, which is the most important medical education forum right now outside of research to practice. I did not really fully understand why the FDA went kind of overboard with this very broad approval because, you know, as you said, you know, people will try it. People will use, everyone wants immunotherapy. And I've seen so many patients with a TMB of 10. It's 10 plus, so 10 is included. Yeah. And it is really common. And I'm worried that patients will be misled in a way and providers will be misled. And, you know, if a patient sits in front of me and says, I want immunotherapy because it's an approved agent, it's hard to take a stand and say, you know, financial toxicity, clinical toxicity, and, you know, perhaps not going into a clinical trial or using standard treatment options. I mean, it's not that regorafenib and TAS-102 are really complete game changers, but they have activity. They have phase 3 data that are clearly more robust in colorectal cancer than in the TMB-10 pembrolizumab treatment approaches.
So we'll see where that leads. But just to finish out this discussion, let's hear about a case. And Axel, you had this 40-year-old patient. Can you comment on what happened there?
Yeah, that was an interesting case, you know, where I started to learn a little bit more about, you know, checkpoint inhibitors and MSI high tumors. This was a patient, actually, when I was at Mayo Clinic, who had a liver metastasis from a sigmoid cancer. It was actually a Lynch patient. This patient defined actually the whole family as a Lynch family, so it was clearly very important for him to know that. They initially had FOLFOX neoadjuvant indication because the idea was to resect his liver metastasis. And he was treated outside initially, but he developed actually abscesses in his liver, had repeated septic episodes, and came to Mayo after he'd received a cycle of FOLFIRI, you know, as a second-line therapy because, you know, the liver metastasis did not respond to FOLFOX. So he came to see me, and this is actually the first patient where I used pembrolizumab in a neoadjuvant indication in this setting, which 3 years ago seems like a world ago. So he actually had a nice response, excellent tolerability of the treatment. And, you know, the immune therapy was also important because he had these repeated septic episodes on chemotherapy and with the liver metastasis. He eventually, you know, went resection of his sigmoid cancer and the liver metastasis. And, you know, both areas had actually a complete pathologic CR. So we still saw some spots, you know, some lesions on the MRI. But, you know, upon a pathologic review, all these lesions were, you know, didn't have vital tissue anymore. So he was then followed and moved away from Mayo Clinic. But what I learned here is neoadjuvant checkpoint inhibitors can work in MSI-high tumors, number one. Number two, we probably underestimate the completeness of the response from a pathologic level because we might still have some residual scar lesions that it might see those scar lesions present after immune checkpoint inhibitors. But, you know, we hardly ever go after all these lesions to resect them. This is actually something that I've talked to Scott Kopetz about, and I know there are some MD Anderson experience exactly in the same way. So we are underappreciating the completeness and the robustness of the response on checkpoint inhibitors sometimes.